Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 13th of June, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. We'll be joined by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives by live video Skype. Well, we're delighted to say that it's really lovely here in Plymouth. We've got wall-to-wall blue sky. We've got sunshine. It's wonderful. And I believe the sun is peeping through in Holland, so stay with it.
It's all falling apart, Brian.
I was going to move from the sun is shining to the fact that politically it's all falling apart. And for me, this picture really just sort of captured things, because here they are. These are the people that we have entrusted with the nation state.
Well, I didn't.
well, this is true, but... We'll just say that the at the moment Theresa has been put where she is, and she could only do that with the support of the general public. I think I'm correct in saying.
I'm not certain about that either.
I'm not winning here. Okay, well, let's just add a bit to this, because if we think about what's going on, this is a cult at work. And I think the message of our news today is largely that, of course, it's not just the Conservative Party. We've got a Liblab con at work. It is operating as a cult, and what are they doing? Lies, deceit, propaganda and spin. So all of it is attacking the British public. And I will just pop this on screen, which I found by accident as we were preparing the news. But this is part of Ian Crane's AV6 back in May 2015, just after the election. And let's just have a read of this was a quote by... Peter Hitchens. He said, "I never for a moment imagined that big money and big lies could so successfully scare, cajole and diddle the electorate of this country. I grew up in a Britain both better educated and more honest than the one we have today. Perhaps that is why I could not see this possibility. I have not seen in my lifetime a campaign so dishonest, so crude, so based in fear, and so redolent of third world and banana republic political tactics." Now, that was the statement from Peter Hitchens, but that wasn't the election which we've just experienced. That was the election back in May 2015. And I said at the time he was right with one exception. The general election campaign of 2015 was not crude. It was the outcome of years of conspiring to build a common purpose in which those whom we trusted to lead, govern and protect us were carefully chosen and groomed to act beyond their authority and betray us. And underneath, I pointed out, of course, that it was Julia Middleton, the chief executive of the political charity Common Purpose, who knew way back in 2007 that Downing Street was always wondering whether people have sufficient guile to be brought into a coalition the government is building. So, Mike, it's really incredible, isn't it? We can apply those words to the election that's just taken place. But, of course, the whole thing carefully constructed, immense amounts of money at work behind the scenes to influence voters, particularly the younger generation. And now we've got this orchestrated chaos.
Yes.
Well, here's a young journalist, of course, who falls straight into the trap, Abby Wilkinson. She was writing in The Guardian. And what was it to do with? Well, she says she's exposed Boris Johnson because he's a lovable, bumbling idiot. Well, of course, this couldn't be further from the truth. This man is extremely calculating and dangerous, which is why he's manoeuvring in the wings to take over from the lovely Theresa May.
Yes. Well, some people seem to be finally getting the point, Brian, because... The Express asking, is Brexit a giant stitch-up? EU talks delay as Tories say we should stay in the single market. This is a typical Express headline, but nonetheless, we've been saying that this is a stitch-up for quite a long time. So glad to see that they're finally getting the point.
We've said it, Mike, and also we've been attacked for saying it. It's been quite interesting to see a few people attacking us because we dared to say that the whole Brexit thing was a psychological operation. It was a lie.
Absolutely. And more Brexit news, because Theresa May is apparently losing half of her Brexit ministers just before the talks are meant to start. Now, if you remember back about a year or so, we said that, of course, what was going to happen under this Article 50 procedure was that, first of all, there'd be lots of argument between various people, lots of delaying tactics, and lots of things would happen to make sure that the thing never got going in the first place. This is typical of exactly what we were talking about. So the Mirror here saying that sources have confirmed that Lord Bridges has resigned and David Jones was ditched in a reshuffle. So that's two out of four of the team. David Davis is left, and he seems to be, at this point at least, loyal to Theresa May, and Junior Minister Robin Walker is still there. But how does Brexit, how do the negotiations get going if you're spending the next period of time recruiting new ministers for the job?
Well, of course, it's all very convenient if your best Brexiteers go, very convenient that you're left in a very delicate position and you have to negotiate an ever softer Brexit.
What have we got? The DUP are back in London today at Downing Street for more discussions. Reuters here calling them the Northern Irish Kingmakers. Prime Minister May, they say, has to meet with these people because she is forming a coalition. Is that what she's doing? Well, apparently not, because David, we'll bring in David Ellis at this point, because Robert Burns, MP, doesn't seem to think it's a coalition. He says, it's not a coalition, you dick.
Not our words, his words, we say.
Yeah. Is this man fit to sit in Parliament?
Are any of them fit to sit in Parliament, David?
Well, no, they're not. I mean, and this is the cold reality of, isn't it? You know, that we've got the pretense of, people are saying, oh, you know, this is chaos and it's, dreadful. I've had a very senior member of military staff say to me, oh, what a mess. But this isn't a mess. A mess is something like an untidy bedroom or something or other. This is just beyond anything that we've seen for quite some time. We literally have subversion in front of us, that there is only the pretense of trust. There isn't actually trust because the public, frankly, don't trust them. And it doesn't seem to matter what way you want to butter this up, either Labour or Conservative or whatever. It doesn't seem to make any difference. You can't seem to break through this facade and charade of actual government. So I think the biggest thing for me was May, when she left the palace, was booed at the gates. I've not seen that before. And we have what frankly is the breakdown of government completely. Now, whether that's by design or whether it's due to ineptitude, by deed or effect, it makes no difference because the consequences are just as serious for the public. That what's supposed to be efficient, i.e. the democratic part of our government, number 10 and so on and so forth, is just an utter cesspit. And the divine part of our government, the crown, frankly, I think, this is the conclusion I've come to, that if you've got people in number 10 prepared to take people's names in vain, then they're prepared to do anything. And I'm quite happy to submit the question out there. Did they take it? Who else's names did they take in vain? You know, if they were prepared to take admirals and generals' names in vain, who else are they going to do it to? So I think we've got very severe problems, and we're talking about people that are up talking or trying to upsell civil chaos. You've got a chief of police down there in Devon talking about having civilians walking around with firearms. I mean, this is just beyond anything this country's seen in 100 years.
David, what are your thoughts on this? What's apparently going to be an agreement with the DUP, which apparently still hasn't been actually settled. So apparently we don't know whether there is a government or not at this point. What are your thoughts on linking up with the DUP? Because it's a smaller party with a narrow vision, perhaps, because they're limited to their part of the country and might have some particular requirements, which may destabilise that part of the United Kingdom. So, you know, there are risks involved in getting involved with the DUP at this time under these circumstances.
But there are. It could be very much a pyrrhic victory. Whilst there's clearly a desire in some factions of what's left of our government, you know, in the offices, I mean, the speed that May went up to the palace and so on and so forth sort of denotes, and the fact that you've got the Queen's secretary, the Right Honourable Sir Christopher Gaines, if I pronounce that properly, were in the Cabinet Office for 2.5 hours thrashing this out before Theresa May went up there. So there is a desire, I think, to form a government, but just at how effective that's going to be, and particularly with trying to crib in these 10 votes in order to command confidence of the House, if that's the correct term, it's going to be really, really, really interesting just to see how it's unravelling. I mean, you've got Alistair Campbell pounding it at the moment about that will destabilise the Northern Ireland peace arrangements. And a lot of people are saying about the DUP's agenda, and their policies are really sort of quite some way removed from that of the Conservative Party, if that's the right way of putting it. I mean, what are we going to end up with? We're going to end up with May being ousted, a new candidate being put up, and another general election. October, will we get that far?
That gives us further chaos, but I'm just going to put my few penneth in, if I may. You said deed or effect with what's happening. In my mind, there is no doubt what we are witnessing is calculated subversion of this country. This is the political elite acting against their own people. We are being attacked by our own government. And the chaos, of course, is a known part of the agenda. So I just remind people, the UK column has been stressing the words of Nick Bowles, Conservative MP and Conservative parliamentary candidate Danny Kruger, who both said the Conservatives were going to use a period of, quote, creative destruction in the public services in order to get in their longer term political objectives. And of course, Eric Pickles has also described himself as a revolutionary who was going to shake up the constitution and the governance of this country. So we're witnessing the calculated plans of revolutionaries. They just dress differently. They're not walking around overtly with guns at the moment. But if we look at the effects on the country, this has got to be subversion. I'll just bring in this man, Michael Fallon, because he's been boasting on. Can we pop him on screen?
Oh, sorry.
We've been pointing out what this man has been doing with regard to EU military unification. But he's also come out very heavy on Theresa May. He said that he and his colleagues had told her what has now got to happen. And here's the quote. We're going to see more collective government. I and other colleagues have made that clear to her. Now, this expression, collective government, I think is very, very important, because he's not talking about Theresa May just being a little bit more pally with her colleagues. He's talking about government in the form of a collective. And what this is the big society, which we had up yesterday. Collective government is big society. This is the agenda that's been running under the surface, driven, amongst others, by Cameron and Eric Pickles. This is communitarian government, and this is essentially what this conspiracy in Westminster is all about. So in my mind, you can come back on this, David, if you like, but in my mind, we are witnessing subversion. This country is being attacked by its own government. And I know in a minute one of the drivers that they want to achieve is violence. But what are your thoughts? Are we being too hard here?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, this is obviously we all still need to be objective. But what we're seeing here is so blatant. You know, it is absolutely blatant and in front of us. You've got then George Osborne coming out a couple of days after the election, tearing them all to shreds. And you've got one of Cameron's advisors, a lady on the BBC, and immediately after stating that only the immediate circle around May. So, I mean, I don't know whether her husband's included in this or not, but it's certainly a valid question to be asked, was that those advisors, Tim and Fiona, and with Gummer over there in Ipswich, constructed the manifesto, and not even the cabinet knew what was in the manifesto. So, and this is the woman that was asking for a mandate to go into government again, and the cabinet didn't even know. So for Fallon to come out and say now, oh, well, we're going to have a collective. Well, what was going on before?
Good question.
We'll pause there.
Yes. Okay, well, look, Brian, you're talking about trouble on the streets, and indeed that seems to be increasingly likely. This is Tommy Robinson posting to his Facebook page a few hours ago. He was very pleased, apparently, at the response that he got at a meeting in Manchester. So I thought we'd just have a look at that meeting, and we'll turn the volume up a little bit so we can hear what's being said. But they're busy chanting. They're chanting Tommy's name. They're clearly very keen to see him. Where's this going to end?
This is a proper meeting. Well, where this is going to end in violence. And once the violence is in, then the state wins instantly, because, of course, they're going to bring in all the measures to clamp down on meetings, groups of people in public, etc.
Yeah.
So this is just the type of thing that we don't want to counter what we're really fighting. My question is, does Tommy Robinson really understand what he's fighting? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. But if we move on from that, then... also the question has to be, what is his agenda at the end of the day? So here we've got the Jewish Chronicle. What makes the EDL's former leader, who says he's a friend of the Jews, tick? And they're asking what is his political ideology? They're pointing out that he has been wearing I am a Zionist badges at EDL rallies in the past. And so the question is, what does make Tommy Robinson tick? It's an interesting question.
It's a very interesting question. I don't know, but what I do know is that the route to violence on the street is the exact route that the British state wants at the moment, because that enables them to bring in the full police state. The French, of course, have done this already. So France, no longer a democracy. France is the police state. If Theresa May got the opportunity, she would do exactly the same with all of the backing, the mapper arrangements, the prevent strategy. And so Tommy Robinson, if we're kind to him, he's falling into a trap. If we are a bit more direct, we say, well, perhaps this man is working for other agencies and his objective is to deliberately create this violent situation. It seems to me whatever he's doing, by ignorance or
intent,
is very dangerous. David, we've got to address these issues now. It's not enough to say, well, there are these sorts of people out there and we can just turn a blind eye. I think we've really got to start to do some analysis of what these people are doing and where it's ultimately going to lead if they can't see what the bigger picture is.
Fine. Yes, there's a great many that fit into that category, really, and they would be much more productive not trying to make windows of people's souls and look at the cold reality of actually what's important with the governance of our country and how we're effectively surrendering our sovereignty. And there are two key issues that will trigger that, and one is EU military union, and the other is currency union. So he and the others there would be much more productive challenging MPs and ministers on what's going on with our crown and nation, the cornerstone of our nation, i.e., our military. It's one of the legs of our state table of being a country that's being put into EU military union. I think. As I recall, the first thing that triggered this gentleman from wanting to speak out was troops marching through his town and not being received terribly well. So I think he would be better served if he addressed his attention to the ministers that are actually not treating our military very well in terms of what they're trying to do with it than the current things that they're involved with.
Well, let's move on to defence matters then, and we'll begin with the F-35. I've captioned this pilots who needs them, because apparently quite a number of F-35s have been trying to kill their pilots in the last couple of weeks. So the F-35 has been grounded again indefinitely. So 220 F-35s flying worldwide, 55 of them have been grounded. And why? Because of irregularities. Various people have been saying irregularities in the pilots' oxygen supplies.
That's a very... Very unusual word, isn't it? You have defects, you have faults, but no, it's a you're breathing oxygen, but there was a slight irregularity.
So apparently they weren't breathing oxygen anymore. So that was according to U.S. Air Force spokesman Captain Mark Graff. So these aircraft, now apparently in all cases, the backup oxygen supply did what it was supposed to do, and the aircraft were landed safely, but nonetheless concerning. So the, as I say, the aircraft are grounded indefinitely until that's resolved. But Brian, I think you mentioned earlier that oxygen supplies in military aircraft, that's kind of old hat.
Well, we're going Second World War at least, aren't we?
Well,
so we could supply oxygen to pilots in the Second World War, but in 2017...
in the most expensive fighter jet ever made.
Yeah, it's breathtaking, and I think it's becoming ever more clear that this aircraft is a disastrous aircraft. Britain now totally committed for everything on the purchase of the F-35 because successive governments have utterly betrayed our own aircraft industry. So this is the penalty for saying, well, we're not going to build things ourselves with all the skills that entails. We're going to buy equipment off the shelf because it's cheap. And in the case of the F-35, I think it's cheap and it doesn't work. Well, it's not. It's expensive and it doesn't work. Yeah. I'll re-qualify that.
Indeed. Right. And moving on to NATO then. Well, NATO believes that defence education is key. We've got to be educated about defence. And so they have partnered with a Polish university for a new e-learning program. And this is through its Defence Education Enhancement Program, DEEP. They advise NATO partners how to build, develop and reform educational institutions in the defence and military domain in the form of peer-to-peer conversations. So that's all good. E-learning is becoming a global trend, they say, and DEEP wants to take advantage of that, and they want to use it to improve efficient military education in some partner countries.
We're going to be coming onto this subject in a minute with regard to Sandhurst, where there's some really very strange training which is taking place.
Right. And well, it's always nice to have Federica Mogherini on the screen. And we want to mention her because, of course, she's been talking about EU military unification. I'll ask David to comment on this in a second. And so they have released a white paper on the future of Europe, the European Commission has, and also what they're describing as a reflection paper on the defence issue, on how to address the growing security and defence threats facing Europe and enhance Europe's own abilities in defence by 2025. So now we've got a deadline, it seems, for this. They are presenting, first of all, what High Representative / Vice President Federica Mogherini said. She said, we're moving fast and forward on security in the European Union, and the Commission accompanying and supporting the determination of the Member States. Today's reflection paper is the Commission's contribution to the reflection on the future of our Union in this field, defence, starting with the demand for a more integrated and effective defence coming from our citizens. So apparently European citizens, Brian, are demanding military unification. Through the European Union, we can support Member States in developing military capabilities and investing more efficiently in defence. We've come a long way in less than 1 year, and we're determined to keep the pace. Well, of course, if you look at the timeline on this on the UK Column website, you'll find that, in fact, this has been going on for more than 1 year. But anyway, the EU leaders are going to meet on the issue in Prague on the 9th of June. But in the reflection paper, they're describing three scenarios. First of all, a security and defence cooperation scenario, and that's where Member States would still decide on the need for security and defence cooperation on a voluntary and case-by-case basis, while the EU would continue to implement national efforts. Then the next scenario is a more ambitious shared security and defence scenario, where Member States would pull together certain financial and operational assets to increase solidarity and defence. And thirdly, the most ambitious scenario, which is the common defence and security scenario, and that foresees a progressive framing of a common union defence policy leading to common defence based around Article 42 of the EU Treaty. The existing provision allows a group of member states to take European defence to the next level. Under this scenario, protecting Europe would become a mutually reinforcing responsibility of the EU and NATO. And David, frankly, they've released this reflection paper where they're proposing these three scenarios for open discussion, they say. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at what has been done already it is clear that it is scenario three, the common defence and security scenario, which is what is being implemented, particularly when, you know, in every time we see Federica Mogherini in public, she is accompanied by Jens Stoltenberg. Jens Stoltenberg invited to all the foreign ministers' meetings, all the defence ministers' meetings. You know, this man is not a member of the European Union, and yet he takes part in every single relevant meeting that he can possibly take part in. So it, you know, it's absolutely clear where they're already at with this, and this reflection paper is really a bit of obfuscation.
Oh, completely. Yeah, I mean, this is just the facade. I mean, the reality there is clearly that the EU now have hijacked NATO, and that's been going on for quite a while. As my understanding is, from an admiral telling me that quite some time ago, that the EU were subcontracting work to NATO, but were not declaring that openly in the media, so that they were effectively, the orders were coming from the EU for then NATO to carry out work. So obviously anybody that was within the NATO operation thought it was NATO, and of course it's not. It's being driven by the EU. So let's make no bones about this. That NATO is being hijacked by the EU. It's pretty straightforward. So we've got all of a sudden, you know, the correct phraseology being used so people can judge and evaluate this as to what it is. This is not an EU army. This is unification of our nation's crown armed services, lock, stock and all Her Majesty's barrels, Navy, Air Force, Special Forces, Paras, Royal Marines, British Army, the lot, all of it and all the industry into the EU. Now, the EU will stop at nothing to get this. Make no bones about it. They will stop at nothing to get it. It's vital for them in order to set a single point budget. They require to underwrite and precipitate with the euro. Now, if you take as an opening shot that they will have command of not just all of the big political levers, but the industrial displacements of what they will decide when they place orders, because it's a hand-in-glove operation in terms of the industry and the politics and the military. If you take 2% of the entire GDP of the EU zone, it's an awful lot of money. So there's a lot of economists out there who want to wake up and just see just how important this is and why the politicians don't want to talk about it, because for fear of the public understanding that our military is about to be lost, and all of the industry. So it's very interesting that we've got the phraseology of unification starting to come out. We're seeing Veterans for Britain start to use it. And we're seeing Julian Thompson just wrote a piece in the Express, I understand, with Nick Gutteridge, which was interesting because I'd had a week of ping-ponging with him on Twitter before this article came out. But the only thing I'm objecting to here is saying Britain's sleepwalking into this. And we're not sleepwalking it, because what's happening is the Tories are doing it. So are we suggesting then that Theresa May, Mike Fallon, William Hague, I'm going to put him in the hat as well, Cameron and all them, they're all sleepwalking while all this was going on, are they? No, they were actually doing it. So I've got a very interesting tweet that I've picked up on it's from Alexis Parr. With General Lord Richards and William Hague at Lord Ashcroft's party at the new Devonshire Club. So my thing here to both of those, you know, quite senior people in Whitehall, William Hague wanted to keep the pound. Do you remember that when he was leader of the Tories? Let's keep the pound and we would stay out of currency union. Well, I want to see him do something to keep the British military, because I haven't seen anything yet.
Okay,
and he stood next to General Lord Richards in this tweet I'm looking at.
Yeah. Okay. So, so a piece of news that came out about a week ago, which unfortunately we weren't able to link up with you to discuss, was this European Defence Fund announcement. It's a relatively small amount of money at this point in time, 5.5 billion euros. A small proportion of that going towards Pan-European research and development. But what we seem to have here is an embryonic European-level procurement program with the rest of the money. So another step forward, and one, in fact, which you forecast.
Yeah, I mean, this is relatively academic stuff, forecasting this now, and it's you know, it's a sitter. You know, if they're going to get embedded into R&D, So these are long-term objectives, long-term policies, long-term strategic forecasting on their from their perspective. If you're going to ingress and take control of research and development, you'll take control of all the embryonic industry and the businesses and so on and so forth from a, you know, quite a, you know, a decades type perspective. So this is all very academic. So we're seeing lots of this unfolding. They're ingressing into lots of institutions already. Just as a sort of matter of fact, we're seeing the MOD giving a joint contract to BAE and Rheinmetall for refit of the Challenger tanks in an equal split. So, you know, that's industrial EU military unification. So as exactly as we've said, all this will go hand in glove. Military and industry will go in the same vein if it's not stopped. And it isn't being stopped. There's nothing being done about it in Whitehall at all at the moment.
Yeah. So just at the point, if we play the game and we say there is such a thing as Brexit, if we just assume that, we know that this is going to be a very troubled period. So just at the time we enter this troubled period of negotiation with the European Union over Brexit, we put all of our Challenger tanks in with a German company. So if the whole thing went really sour, we end up with our tanks not updated and probably marooned inside Germany. This is treason. We are living treason. It's more than subversion, because this is calculated. It's not incompetence. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, this is pretty straightforward stuff. We saw all this shenanigans before with EFA, European Fighter Typhoon. RAF call it Typhoon. It's actually the European Fighter, you know, and cluing the title there, you know, and this is a 30-year project. You know, this is not a new concept that we would pan-European industrialise, you know, since 57 with the Sandwich Paper. But there was massive trouble with getting involved with the Germans. They cancelled, they shifted, they changed the goalposts, you know, and it ended up where we then couldn't even sell one of these things anywhere in the world. It was a disaster. You know, what on earth are we doing this? You know, it is completely wrong. If they're talking about jobs and industry and we're the builders and we want stable, you know, we want strong and stable government, don't laugh. Well, they can do that very easily. They can actually do that by, you know, putting these big projects into British companies with British jobs and British families so we can all get on. But they're not doing that. They're on the other bus.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, let's just move on to the subject of the B-2 bomber, which we talked about yesterday. This is the American aircraft which had come into RAF Fairford, we said, under the smokescreen of the elections. Now, we're very pleased that somebody sent in an email with a lot of information saying, well, the thing was, it wasn't just one. So I'll read a little bit of this and then I'll put the other half up on screen. And you can freeze the screen and read it later. Dear editor, further to UK Column News for the 12th of June, please note the deployment situation of Fairford is much more interesting than as suggested in today's news, where Brian and Mike reported just one B-2 arriving. Currently, two B-2 bombers, three B-1B bombers and three B-52 bombers are deployed to Fairford. This represents a full cross-section of what the US Air Force presents to the public as their strategic heavy bomber fleet. There's then sourced to a video, which you can have a look at. It says three B-52Hs from Barksdale Air Force Base and three B-1Bs from Ellsworth Base, along with approximately 800 airmen, are currently supporting exercises Sabre Strike and Ball Tops in the US European theatre. This is the first time that all three bomber platforms have been located together in the European theatre, and only the second time in total American command history. The first was in Guam in August 2016. And the two B-2 aircraft which arrived at Fairford were the Spirit of New York and the Spirit of Missouri. And the remaining part of this says, given current events, context in the Middle East and potential denial of Turkey and Qatar, not forgetting the current build up around Russia's western border and daily sorties ex-Mildenhall combat sent and river joint aircraft to Kaliningrad, the arrival deployment of the B-2, B-1s and B-52s has more weight and relevance than just one B-2 arriving. So I'm going to say, well, thank you very much to that. But let us come on to the subject of Veterans for Britain, because this is the organisation which says that it has been standing up for Britain's armed forces. We are finding some very interesting connections with the organisation. So we've featured top left on your screen, Veterans for Britain, and David Banks is the main spokesman for this organisation. We found him, interestingly, linked in with another gentleman, Mr. Roach, and between the two of them, they've been running a company called Imagine Exit Limited. Now, we were interested in Mr. Banks because one minute he was pro-Brexit, then he was for coming out. But we have a very interesting PR-type organisation with a nice little bit of NLP in the name, because, of course, that is two words pushed into to one. But this is where it gets fascinating, because Mr. Roach is linked in with the Conservative Party chairman. This was a tweet saying what a lot of support he's getting in East Lothian. And we can also show him coming through to this other organisation, which is a consultancy called Cardew Group. Where does Cardew link in? Well, it brings us to Sandhurst, where they were promoting an event by the Inspirational Development Group. Now, to our astonishment, when we went to look for the Inspirational Development Group, we find that this very strange leadership training organisation has been embedded in Sandhurst since 2001. And I think, Mike, that this is the deeply embedded training organisation. This is global leadership style. This is common purpose style. This is NLP reframing type leadership, which we can now see has been embedded in the training system of Sandhurst since 2001. So we've got some pretty senior officers now, army officers, that presumably have already received this new NATO training. I'm just going to say, David, I find this very, very dangerous stuff. If I look at some of the individuals providing this training, we can say, how can you possibly be used to provide training for army officers? Surely Sandhurst itself was set up to provide the necessary training. Is Sandhurst saying that it's now incapable and it needs to bring in people, indeed people from other countries, to train our army officers? There's something very devious going on under the surface, and I find it distressing to see connections back to Veterans for Britain and to the Tory party.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about this training thing before, haven't we? And we've seen it with Royal Navy, and you've certainly asked many questions on that front. You know, I think we've broached the subject quite well before, in terms of really these institutions need to be doing their own training and not be buying in this sort of stuff. So that's a very, you know, that's the separate argument of what should be. But what's going on here, clearly, we keep seeing overlapping circles and overlapping interests from other parties. So a little being an awful lot in Whitehall, and I think this analogy that I've come across since, you know, I spent a lot of time in the lobbies in Parliament and in the Lords, is that you're only 7 degrees away from the Queen in Whitehall. And, you know, I've got to say here, we keep seeing these overlapping things here, and I really do wish that those senior officers, and whether they're in this group or any other group, or there's a few out there acting independently, it's vital now, more than ever, at this stage, that they speak up.
Absolutely. And I'll just add that I'll say it's alleged at the moment. It's alleged that Mr. Banks has got connections through to Tory Central HQ, which would mean we have an organisation supposedly standing up for the military and veterans, but in fact, it's totally linked in with whatever the Conservative policy of the day is. It's very unlikely that that organisation is going to criticise the Tory party if it's true that people in the organisation are working for the Tory party.
Well, yes. I mean, well, then if that's the case, if those allegations, come to be founded, then, you know, there's clearly some kind of conflict of interest, because we're seeing pretty, you know, despicable conduct, really, on the Tory party. And I'm with Peter Hitchens on this. You know, I mean, they have literally destroyed our military over the last few decades. You know, fair enough, Tony Blair and Robertson had a good go at it as well. So they're in the pot as well. But as we well know, there's a pact. You know, that chief admiral who run Trident told me in no uncertain terms that was late with his liaison to the Treasury, there was an unwritten secret pact between both parties that they would not discuss defence. So who does that suit?
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll cover more of that in the coming days and weeks. But let's have a look at the true state of our country. We better bring Theresa May back on screen because, of course, a lot of the pictures of her over recent days are Theresa May going into church or Theresa May coming out of church. So this is all part of the Margaret Thatcher Christian Prime Minister programme. But I think that Theresa May needs to be fully exposed. I think she is the most unbelievable hypocrite, and I think you're going to be shocked at what I'm about to read you. But let's remember that this is the key issue. This lady, Melanie Shaw, child abuse whistleblower, still in prison. She's been in prison for nearly a year now, most of that time in solitary confinement as a result of Theresa May, Home Secretary, and now Theresa May, Prime Minister. We now know that Melanie is in a new prison, which is HMP New Hall, which is Wakefield. And I received a communication from her this morning, which I am going to read as she's asked me to do. This is the state of the British nation. Hello, Brian. I hope you're well. I'm in a mess here. I've been kept in a locked cell for 4 weeks, 24/7. I'm not allowed toilet paper or able to wash my hair. My Tourette's are back this morning. Brian, please, can you help me? I don't even know if you will get this letter. Please, I've nothing to do, no smokes or anything. It hurts me that I'm being treated in such a disgusting way. I don't know who directs this or why. I'm not strong. I may have let myself down, but I'm alone here in this cell. The odd staff utter a few words at you. At least in Foston, they would speak to me and treat me decently. I've no mental health support here, nothing. I'm just locked permanently in a cell like a Romanian circus bear. They want me to suffer and have cabin fever. Please contact Chris Leslie, as he's signed. He's a signed form of authority to share info, she means on herself. And she then authorises me to act on her behalf, and she's asked me to make this letter public. Brian, please thank the listeners for their letters. I have stamps and paper, but no envelopes. If a stamp is stuck to a self-addressed envelope, I will be given it and can write back. I don't need or want money. All I want is to talk to people by letter. Please help me to stop this abuse. I have no knickers either. It's unbelievable, and God only knows what they're doing in private to other inmates. I'm scared to sleep and often put my chair behind my door. Do you understand me? I don't deserve this at all. This is not rehabilitation. I've not been diagnosed as mentally ill, but normal. The area psychologist from Yorkshire has refused to finish her report by not coming back to prison. People who are decent are traumatised by my maltreatment and neglect. So there is a letter from a woman brave enough to speak up on the subject of child abuse. She has now been held for nearly a year, most of that time in solitary confinement, and she is in prison as a direct result of the policy of Theresa May as Home Secretary and Theresa May in the last few weeks as Prime Minister. David, this letter was harrowing to read. I have not had communication from Melanie in a long time. The last communication I had indicated that her treatment was slightly better. She now appears to be being abused again. And if viewers are new to the subject and Melanie Shaw want to know why she's being treated like this, the only explanation we can come up with is because she's yet another child abuse survivor who says that British politicians have been and are involved in the abuse of children. And of course, the government is doing everything it can to cover this up. David, we live in a truly disgusting country.
just the most horrendous thing to listen to that, Brian. It is just pure unadulterated evil what's going on here with this. We need to crowdfund and get this girl a top QC and get her out.
I mean,
this has just gone beyond. I mean, everybody was in uproar about Mandela being abused and stuff going on in Guantanamo Bay, but this is it here in our own country.
Yeah. We're just going to put up the slide with the address for the prison where she is now.
I'll just read it out for anybody that's listening to this and not watching. So the address is Melanie Shaw. Her prison number is A4126DE. And it's HMP Newhall, Dial Wood, Flockton, F-L-O-C-K-T-O-N, Wakefield, WF44XX. Melanie always appreciates letters, and as she says, a self-addressed envelope would be very helpful.
Yes, indeed. And somebody's asking, what exactly was she sentenced on? Well, of course, we're not too sure because she was sentenced in a secret court, but we believe that it was so-called breach of a restraining order. But we at the moment watch Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Michael Fallon, even Mr. Corbyn talking about leaders overseas, how they run their countries. And that letter gives us an insight into the utter filth which Britain has now become under this LibLab con. If people want more details, just watch for the information on the UK column website. I will get up a small article and I will make sure that Melanie's address is there for you to use. But how can we help her? It requires a very large number of people to be taking her MP, Chris Leslie, for example, but indeed Britain's Prime Minister, Theresa May, to task. It's up to us.
Are we ending there?
I think we should, probably. David, thank you very much for joining us. Well, we're in very serious times, as we keep saying, the military being given away to the European Union under a smokescreen of the soft Brexit. We've got violence being whipped up on the streets. What should the bulk of people do? We need moderation. We need reasonable behaviour. But above all, we need people to expose and shout out what's happening. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye.